This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Hey everyone, welcome into another edition of the Lombardi Line, presented as always by BetMGM with Michael Lombardi, longtime NFL executive. I'm Ben Wilson in for Patrick Maher. We'll see Patrick back tomorrow. Michael, welcome back to the show. Did you think we'd be having the Jones-Zappe discussion the way we are now having it here after the way Monday night played out when you went home this weekend to watch all the games?
You know, I said it on my show on Monday. I thought that, you know, if Mac Jones turns the ball over, he was going to be on a short leash. And you know, the Patriots did what they have typically done all season when they've lost, is they've turned the ball over and gave the game away. And in that game, to me, was a telltale on they have to protect the football offensively, starting with their quarterback. And then secondly, which I think is the bigger issue that's kind of gotten masked in this quarterback talk, is the fact that New England still is ineffective against six position offenses. And what do I mean by six position offenses? So the National Football League has changed. We've morphed into this. The quarterback has a distinctive role in the offense, right? And so, and there's seven teams that basically have this element to their offense: Philadelphia, Chicago, Baltimore, the Giants, Atlanta, Buffalo, and Arizona. Those seven, the quarterback is intimately involved in the run game, the pass game, and everywhere. He becomes the sixth skill player. And because of that, New England really has a hard time defending that offense. They've never made Buffalo punt in the last 2 weeks. They're too slow at inside linebacker. And so they allow Justin Fields to have these moments where he looks like he could actually be a good player when their lack of speed on defense is so obvious that it became a problem. And that's ultimately, for all the conversation about quarterback, that sixth element that they play against. Look, they've lost to Baltimore already this year, right? Anytime they're going to play a six-position team like the ones I just mentioned, New England's going to struggle.
It's funny because you look at a Jet team that does not qualify, but to, you know, to your characteristics of what makes a six-position team offensively, yet they have been into this at least the last couple weeks stretch here, Michael, where the goal has certainly been, let's just put our quarterback Zach Wilson in positions to just not kill us. Let's ride the ground game. Let's be smart. Keep the chains moving. Stay out of third and longs. How do you imagine that playing out, given that, again, it's not a run-first position like Wilson, but he is mobile, and they have been a very effective ground game in New York, one of the best run games here so far in the last few weeks?
Well, see, there's a difference here, and we've got to, as bettors, we've got to understand the difference, right? Detroit's not a six-position offense. They played them really well, right? Pittsburgh's not a six-position offense. They played them really well. The Jets are not a six-position. They're not worried about the quarterback running or having so many runs. He may run and take off. Mitchell Trubisky did and made a couple plays, but eventually they have, really, the offense isn't centered around his running. That's key, right? So they'll play the Jets really well. I mean, they'll give the Jets, I mean, the Jets offense is 4-for-25 on third. They were 14 against Denver, and they were 1-for-11 against the Packers. I mean, they can't convert a third down. And you're right. The way they're playing is simply this: we'd rather punt than turn it over. And since the second quarter of the Steeler game, they've kept Zach Wilson from beating them, and that's why they've won.
I know you wrote about this week too for VSiN.com, talking about both the New York teams, Jets and Giants, who have excelled both in the turnover department as well as fourth quarter scoring. We are going to talk, by the way, with Andy Vasquez, who covers the Jets for the Star Ledger there in New Jersey a little bit later this hour. And so the question, it's funny, we've talked about it every week on the Giants, like how long can this continue? For the Jets, though, running such like a tunnel vision type approach offensively, where Zach Wilson, you're asking him to make 2 to 3 plays a game, which you would think normally asking a quarterback to only do that should not lead to long-term success. But how long can this go for a Jet team that has not had the market really go against them this week? Market was on the Jets last week in Denver, and market doesn't really know what to do with this game so far this week. Patriots still holding steady here, about 1.5 favorite on the road.
Well, I mean, the reality of the game is simply this, is that the Jets offense, their offensive line lack of, you know, they lose Tucker, a guard. They've lost their starting left tackle. You know, their tackle situation is very good. They can't protect their quarterback. They're 19th in the NFL in terms of sacks per play. So they don't do a really good enough job in terms of that. And then when you break down the team, they're 27th in the league offensively in how many punts they have. That's a key number we don't talk enough about on my show or across the network, is punts per game, punts per possession, punts per play, excuse me. And so the Jets are now, where I think they've had a great advantage is, let's just break it down. And this is not being critical of the Jets at all. This is just fact. They played a Pittsburgh offense that we know is not very good. They played a Miami offense with Teddy Bridgewater, and he got hurt on the first play of the game. That wasn't very good. They come back and they play Denver. That offense isn't very good. They go to Green Bay, and we know that offense isn't very good. So they haven't really played. And when you examine the numbers, and if you watch the Denver tape closely, like I did yesterday, Denver had many opportunities to move the football in the game.
Yeah.
They did. I mean, it's only Denver's lack of execution and their lack of precision. And when you examine the numbers, New England's defense in certain categories that determine winning and losing are actually better than the Jets. But New England hasn't done what the Jets are borrowing New England's mantra, which is avoid losing first. New England's doing that to an Excel level that I've never seen before under the Bill Belichick regime.
Right. I can tell you, having a teaser leg on Denver this past Sunday, watching every snap, the opportunities were there. It was like, come on, man, just make one throw.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get the sense when you watch the tape that they just shut you down completely. I mean, the media wants you to believe that this Jet defense just took you out of the game completely. But there was ample plays on there that were to be made. And they just didn't. And they couldn't string enough plays together. I think this is going to be a close game. I think it's a field goal game. I don't think home field's going to matter. I think the fact that New England was embarrassed last week is going to really have their full attention here. But I expect New England to move the ball. Do I think it's going to be a 35-31 game? No. I think this is a 2017 type affair.
And just like the market has not really been sure what to do with the side here, same thing can be said for the total. We've stood pretty packed at the 40.5 number, one of the lower totals on the board, and for good reason heading into this week. You were also talking about how it's very rare what we're seeing right now in the throughout the Belichick regime of struggling against these six position type offenses. And you mentioned how you figured there could be a change if there were early struggles for Jones, but historically, and you would know better than basically anybody else, what was the precedent for that, actually an in-game first half benching? A guy went back through the numbers. I could only find three instances Belichick had ever done that, at least an in-game benching. What did you think about that, just given his history?
Well, we make it so much that we are in the moment. Remember, they went on a winning streak because they stopped turning the ball over. And when Mac did that dumb thing of turning it over, throwing the ball down there and just giving them a play when you're on the board of the red zone, I mean, I'm sure they went over that all week. Like, we cannot turn the ball over against this Bear team. And they did. And so when you do something that you've been talked about, I didn't think Mac moved very well. I didn't think he was driving the football very well. I thought he was I thought he was coming back too early. Maybe Belichick saw that. I don't know. I haven't talked to him about that. But the reality of it is to me, if you're demanding your quarterback protect the football and then he goes out there and throws one that's just ridiculous, then what are you going to do? You're going to sit there? You're either coaching it or allowing it to happen. I mean, you're not going to put him back in the game. And when they put the other kid back in the game, they had a 14-10 lead, had a chance to take the game over. But once again, they couldn't stop him. I mean, the fact that they allow Justin Fields to make enough plays. I mean, Justin Fields fumbles, takes him out of field goal range, and then they allow him to get back into field goal range at the end of the half. I mean, Justin Fields, I don't think people are – he's had the ball on the ground 11 times this year.
Mm-hmm. Even though for a guy who is still fourth in rushing attempts among quarterbacks, fourth in yards, he's been able to pick up yards on the ground, yet all the passing numbers have continued to be basically rock bottom. And you wonder now, you juxtapose the New England defensive scheme, which did have a lot of holes, and Chicago was able to take advantage of that. Now the Bears go and take on a Dallas team that, say what you want about Dak Prescott coming back, how disjointed that offense looked for essentially 3.5 quarters, ultimately covering in a win against the Lions 24-6. What are you actually doing, though, against that defense that continues to be among the league's elites, especially with guys who can take away the ability to run at quarterback like a Micah Parsons, who, by the way, now your favorite to win Defensive Player of the Year this season.
I mean, this game sets up better for Dallas. I mean, Dallas will really stifle Chicago. Now, Dallas has got to handle the inside run. Then I think that's one of the reasons why they got Hankins from the Raiders this week on a trade. They've got to be able to do that. And Dallas will be able to run the football effectively against the Bears at times. And there's enough throws. There's enough easy throws for Dak to make. I think what Dallas did last week was pretty good. I mean, Dak wasn't good. They played to the strength of their team, and they just said to the Detroit Lions, look, why don't you just lose the game? And Detroit, frankly, said, okay, no problem. We'll make sure we do this. We'll turn the ball over four times on every possession in the fourth quarter. We'll fumble three times, and we'll have an interception. And we'll be the stupidest team in the league in terms of not, A, challenging the touchdown and then trying to run the play really fast. So I think Dallas is on this course. Now, there's no advantage in the turnover takeaway. I mean, Dallas is 0.09 in positivity on the turnover takeaway. The Bears are 0.03, so that gap is there. The Cowboy defense is more in tune to play this offense than New England was. Why? Because Dallas is fast inside. New England is slow. Bentley can't run. They can't make plays. The width of the field gives New England too much trouble.
And so that's, I think, a great pro tip. We're just starting the show, but already focusing not just on overall defensive numbers, but the specific parts of the field that then are conducive to matchups in specific games like this. For the Bears, their ability to run through the tackles up the middle is going to be paramount to having success. It doesn't appear to be on paper like they can do that against Dallas. I also would say, pour one out for Matt Santos, our producer. He had the Lions +7 in the contest. He got cameled, you know?
I mean, it's horrible. I mean, it's about, 10-6, 12 minutes to go, Matt, and they end up getting beat 24-6.
Poor Matt. I was with Matt this Sunday. It happens. We still have a lot to get to on the show. We mentioned our guest covering the Jets a little bit later this hour. Also, Harry Gagnon joins us next hour. But up next, we talk some news and notes around the National Football League.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
It is time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all of your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Ben Wilson back with Michael Lombardi in for Patrick Maher today. Looking at some news and notes around the league, Michael, we just had a press conference this morning from across the pond. Broncos have arrived taking on the Jaguars. Did you see this? Russell Wilson tells reporters on the flight over, about an 8-hour flight from Denver to London, he spent 4 hours stretching and rehabbing on the flight. And not only that, then was doing high knees while all of his teammates were trying to sleep. Was he practicing his Broncos country let's ride chant too? I mean, what's the deal here with Russ? Apparently he's coming back this week from what we've been told so far.
I mean, the guy is a good salesman, isn't he? I mean, you know, it's like the team's falling apart, but everything's still good. You know, I mean, look, that game last week, I will say if he played, they probably beat the Jets. Don't you think so from watching the game? You know,
probably my biggest the biggest error on my handicap was thinking, is the drop off really going to be significant from Wilson to Rippon? Rippon's not an NFL quarterback. As Wilson's been, numbers are bottom five across the board. At least he gives you the presence of an NFL player.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Broncos have all sorts of issues offensively in terms of getting the ball in the red zone and doing the kind of things that they have to do. But I'm with you. I thought, to me, the right play was to take the Jets. Patrick was shocked I took the Jets as one of my picks because I typically don't like to do that. But when you looked at it against Denver, I thought that when I thought both teams would dominate the line of scrimmage, the Jets defensive front against the Broncos. I don't think I was actually right about that. I thought Rippon had time to throw the ball. I actually thought the protection was pretty good in the game. He just didn't make a lot of good throws, had 22 incomplete passes in the game. And I think ultimately that's what got it. And so I left that game thinking, okay, you know, if Russell plays, but this one over across the pond, I mean, this Jacksonville team, I don't know if you watched that Jet game, this Jacksonville team continues to ignore the strengths of their team. They continue to do dumb things in dumb situations, and their defense has gotten worse as the year's gone on. And as bad as Denver is, Jacksonville, which should win, should have won last week, you know, should have beaten Houston, but we're collecting a lot of shouldas down in Jacksonville. And at some point, when do you sit there and say, wait a minute, you know, we've got to change this? I mean, think about this, Ben. They're fourth in the National Football League in punts per play. They're playing against the Broncos, who are 30th. And we know from watching the Broncos so much on national television, we've seen a lot of their punts, right? Like, how are you this good moving the ball but can't get it in the end zone? A lot of it is because you do dumb things on fourth down. And that's been the trademark of what Doug Peterson has done since 17.
And it might appear, at least in the market, like maybe the bettors are starting to come around to what you were talking about, where Jacksonville has gotten support, especially from professional, respected bettors each of the past few weeks. And this has started to go the other way at three and a half early in the week. Now down to 2.5, pretty much market wide across the board. And most of those two and a halves are flat juice now.
You can't trust him. And I think ultimately what happens in betting is the what this is for me working here 4 years at Visa. What I've learned, and I've learned a lot, is the fact that bettors stay with their numbers. You know, there's this thing in bias when we're making decisions, you know, we get into this, you know, we get into the past week. So it carries over into the next week. And professional bettors don't do that. They just look at their numbers, right? They say, okay, like me last week, Jacksonville laying three to the Giants. That was a good number based on your power rankings and based on the elements of how you break down the game. And if you don't factor Peterson's decision-making into that game, then you're kind of left off alone. And I think that's what I've learned. And so, like, for me, I understood the bettors wanting that game. I didn't understand why they would take it because they didn't put the Peterson factor in there.
Right. It's funny how if you listen to our Guessing Line show every Monday morning, Chris Andrews, who runs the South Point Sportsbook, he said, if you weren't on the Jaguars, if you were like one of the wise guys, you know, respected bettors, you got your wise guy card revoked. Like every, you know, it was one of those numbers plays, but it did not take into account the coaching and all the mistakes made by Doug Peterson. You just wonder on the Jacksonville front, this is a team that we viewed, at least based on the numbers early in the season, to be a top 10 defense against the pass. And thinking about the fact they gave up over almost 400 passing yards to Matt Ryan, a quarterback who is now benched and looks like his future in the National Football League might just be over with how horrific he's been as a first-year QB for Indy. What does that say about Jacksonville defensively, even though the early numbers in the first couple weeks of the year, Michael, looked so promising and positive?
Well, I think one of the things that has looked promising and positive was their ability to rush the passer, kind of hit up their mistakes in the back end. You know, they're 6 in defensive sacks per play, which is a good number, right? You know, and you would, excuse me, I'm sorry, they're 23rd in that number. Like they were earlier in the season, they were much better in that area. You know, they're 28th in defensive sack per place. They're 23rd in red zone defense, you know. And so to me, when you look at that, you're saying, wait a minute, hold on. Like they're supposed to win up front. That's the strength of this team, and they haven't been able to do it. And because of that, because of the mistakes they make offensively by just ridiculously going for things that they should just, they're up 17-13, kick the field goal, go up one score.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they try to run one of those quarterback runs, you know, try to sneak it in there, didn't get it. They tried it earlier in the game on fourth down. They turned down another field goal, okay, like they did in Washington in week one. That would have gave them a lead, another lead. But they try to run some power sweep with the quarterback. Like, what are we doing? Peterson's doing exactly what Frank Wright did in Indy, and now Frank Wright doesn't want to do it anymore because he's been told that you're killing the team. Like, we're going for this on fourth down. It makes no sense at all. And I think ultimately this is why you can't bet this game. I don't think you could bet this game if you want to play the Jags. I just don't trust the head coach to make the right decisions at the right time.
At least for those of us on the West Coast, it's probably a blessing. This is relegated to the 6:30 a.m. kickoff at Wembley Stadium. The only
you're going to watch it?
I know, I will.
I want to watch it because I want to watch him make decisions in game time. I want to watch him. I mean, look, the reason he left Philly, he's got, you know, he's Winston Churchill. He's got a statue in front of the stadium here, right? You know, but the reason he left is he wanted to be more involved with he wanted to make more decisions. And the Eagles probably said, no, you're really not, just follow what we're doing well without that. I think now that he's on his own, we're seeing kind of what we've seen. I mean, he's got the best team in the AFC South. He really does. I don't think anybody can dispute that. If you put Mike Vrabel down there coaching that team, what do you think they're going to be?
You could flip the record, couldn't you? I mean, with what the schedule has been so far, 2-5.
I think
it
is.
They've had, what, 4 games that have been extreme coin flips, last week included.
Can't close them out. Look, like for me, we talk about Chrissy Andrews, and he's so right. Like my line on this game is 3-7-5, which tells me that at 3, I'm picking up. I've got 1.8 of wiggle room in that, okay, which is what you would want to do. But I don't trust Peterson to take advantage of the 1.8 wiggle room. Like, right. To me, it's a no play. It's a John Oates play. No, I can't. No, I can't go for that.
And he can't
because
go for
I don't.
That. Yeah.
I can't. I don't trust him. How do you trust? I mean, look, Campbell. You can't trust Campbell either. You can't. I mean, some of the decision making in these games. Can you trust? I asked Femi this question, and I know you're big in analytics, and I respect it. But I want you to tell me what Mike McDaniels does that's so brilliant that makes him brilliant.
You know, it's funny too. You mentioned that then we'll kind of segue here into the Dolphins, because it's funny for all of these different coach decisions over the first 7 weeks of the year that you could at least say, well, the analytics and the numbers said, yeah, it was a coin flip to slight edge by going for it. What's funny is you brought up the McDaniel point up 6 in that game against Pittsburgh, going for it 4th and 3 late in the third quarter, a chance to go up by 9. That is one of the more egregious misses we have seen of a coach, even if you are looking just purely from the numbers. Numbers did not say at all, go for it.
So when
you're getting into those positions where now all of a sudden, forget just the raw numbers. You're not even understanding
right.
the flow.
I said it on the podcast. They're giving analytics a bad name.
Yeah,
he's
absolutely.
Giving analytics a bad. It's not fair to analytics to say that was an analytical. But how do you see the reason they say it is so that you don't get blamed for it. It's like the Wizard of Oz. You're behind some curtain. When you throw the word analytics out there, it's like you're protected. It's like you're protected by something that nobody really knows or understands. There's no chart that says don't go up by 2 scores in the fourth quarter. And then when you add the fact, if you're watching the game, you know Pittsburgh can't score. Plus, I don't know how many you counted, Ben, but his quarterback was trying to throw 5 interceptions.
They counted 4 dropped interceptions. You could make the case. There were 5. And what's funny about this week now, your head might explode.
I know you
secretly will love this, because not only do we get Hackett and Peterson going at it in London, we get Dan Campbell and Mike McDaniel going at it in Detroit too this week. So we have some incredible coaching matchups on the card for week number 8. What we'll also discuss up next, these teams that are coming off Thursday night have actually looked pretty good the following week here, with the last few weeks of data to support that, and some other notes around the NFL. Can the Falcons get back on the cover train? We'll talk about that next.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Get everything VSiN has to offer for the rest of the football season for only $99. Sign up now and get VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl, including our Pro Picks daily recap of the top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests. Pro tools like our exclusive betting splits, pro tips with actionable insights to up your betting game, deep dive daily betting reports on the NBA, NHL, and MLB playoffs, plus our upcoming college basketball, college bowl, and Super Bowl betting guides. Give yourself an edge. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to get your $99 mid-season special today. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Back on the Lombardi Line with Michael. I'm Ben. We're talking just general adjustments here for teams now that we have 7 weeks of data going into week 8. And so many early season trends, Michael, that came to an end in week number 7. Cardinals were 0-6 in the first half. That comes to an end. Same thing for the Bears. That came to an end Monday night. And the Falcons, 6-0 against the number, full game. And a big crash course for them, getting blown out. The 35-17 scoreline. I know you talked about this with Patrick Monday. You wrote about it on VSiN.com. Really was not an indicator of how dominant Cincinnati was with explosive plays. So on the Falcons side of this, 1 week of just being overmatched and exposed in particular spots, or is this a troubling sign for you? For the first time, we really saw Atlanta look completely overmatched and outplayed Sunday.
Well, I mean, they gave up 10 plays of over 20 yards, and they gave up 4 of them, I think 3 of them for touchdowns, and so one was for 60. I mean, they gave up big plays. And the game wasn't really as close as the score. If the Bengals punt the ball out at bounds at the end of the half, they don't get 3 points there. So, look, I mean, this is – Atlanta has one way to play. There was six-position skill set offense. You know, I mean, Mariota's going to end up carrying the ball based on his production so far this year. He'll end up carrying it 119 times. They're going to involve him. They're not going to want to run. They're not going to want to allow him to throw it more than 20. They don't really want to throw it. So they're going to play the way they play. And they're playing against a team like Carolina, which is not very good. Carolina is 32nd in points per play. They're 31st in fourth quarter production. You know, they're 32nd in getting first down. So the game is going to be tight, right? And because the game is tight, you can continue to play the way you want to play if you're Atlanta. And I think this is a coin flip game, really. I'm surprised at 4.5 because Atlanta is never going to really dominate anybody. And the way Carolina played, if you're a Panther fan, what you had to feel good about that game was the Panthers have played really well defense in the first half all year, right? They played very good in the first half. I think they're one of the best teams in the league. In fact, I have it here on my notes here. They're one of the best teams in the league in first half defense. They're actually second in the league in first-half defense. They're 29th in the second half. And against Tampa, they've changed that. They rallied back and were able to win the game. That's what it's going to take for them to win the game or cover the spread.
Fourth against the run, too, Carolina defensively on the season. And you're talking about why that matters. It's a Falcon team that, you look at last season, only three quarterbacks attempted over 115 rushing attempts. You mentioned Mariota on pace for the 119 this season. And isn't it fair to say, second in the first half versus 29th in the second half for Carolina defensively, so much of that had to do with getting literally nothing from your quarterback position and offense, where your defense is on the field so much, eventually there's just no way it's going to hold up. And it would be more of a, it's not so much just a random trend first for second half, it's more defense being on the field for 40 minutes a game like they've been in some spots.
No doubt. I mean, they fired their coach, but really when you, this is not like a team that was playing and just getting whooped, right? I mean, when they fired their coach after the San Francisco game, you know, that game kind of got out of hand. San Francisco played well, but for the most part, all the other games, it's a one-score game into the fourth quarter. They couldn't do it. It took them a while, but in the first time all year, in the first time it took 7 weeks, they finally got some production out of their offense in the passing game. Mm-hmm. They were able to complete passes, and P.J. Walker was really good. He made some really good throws, and they were able to run the football. And instead of trying to force-feed McCaffrey into the offense, they just ran their offense, and it proved to be effective. Now they're going to have to do it. This Atlanta-Carolina series going back and forth has been pretty good. I mean, both teams have been able to win one game each. I don't see either team dominating the teams, but I do think that if Carolina can play better defense into the fourth and can contain the run game, right, if they can contain it, they've got a chance to do that. And, you know, but when they played San Francisco and Arizona, those two teams that they lost to ran the football effectively on them.
Market seems to be in agreement with what you're thinking. Open 6.5 for Atlanta at home. Again, keep in mind, a team that's been in that underdog role most of the year. Now you're laying nearly a touchdown at home. Market has gone the other way. We're down to 4.5s, couple of fives still out there. I just worry about the spot for Carolina in general, Michael. You think about this, just the handicapping perspective. Like, that was their Super Bowl last week with Tom Brady coming in, and you have McCaffrey out, coach out, all your quarterbacks out. I just wonder what you – obviously, it's a division game, so you get up for it regardless. And they're only a game out of first, as crazy as that is to say, in a bad NFC South. I just wonder about the letdown potentially here for Carolina with how limited the personnel is on offense.
Well, I mean, they do have good personnel. I mean, look, DJ Moore's a really good player. Chenault, this kid that they have, Chenault, who they traded for from Jacksonville, mm-hmm. is one of their better players. And, look, Chuba Hubbard and Foreman are two good backs. I mean, they have actually better skill players than the Tennessee Titans do. They don't have Derrick Henry, but they've got two tight ends, Tremble being one of them, that can catch the ball. The line got better last week. This is not a team that doesn't have skill players or devoid of talent. It's a team that hadn't really gotten a lot of production out of their quarterback. They really hadn't. I mean, you go back and watch the Carolina tapes, and again, I know my son coaches there, but I watch them very closely, and there's a lot of throws that are there that they just don't make. I mean, I don't know if you could play any worse than Baker Mayfield play. I don't know if you could play. I mean, I know what Steve Wilkes said, that it's not the time to go back to Baker. There's not going to be a time to go back to Baker. I mean, they're going to have to deal with Baker down the road when he's healthy, because he's got so many incentives in his contract. He's going to want to get out on the field. That's what's happened with Matt Ryan. They just shut Matt Ryan down and made it very clear, we're not paying you any more money when you can't really execute. So that's what they did. I think Carolina's going to have to do the same thing with Baker, or cut him.
At least for now, you can get by with saying, well, he's hurt, we could just throw him on the sidelines. But yes, a very murky position to be in. You think about that line now again, down to 4.5 here for Carolina and Atlanta. How about the Matt Ryan situation now? You go to Indianapolis, another topic you wrote about at VSiN.com. If you were Frank Reich, you've gone from being all in on this quarterback a couple weeks ago and saying Sam Ehlinger wasn't even good enough to be a backup to, well, now all of a sudden you hand Ehlinger the keys to the car. What have you made of this 180 it seemingly is from that GM and front office, also with Frank Reich, the coach there in Indy?
I mean, when he threw the pick six against Tennessee in that game, I just said, that's it. You know, and there was a lot of movement on Indianapolis in that game, and I was reluctant to go the Indianapolis way because I wanted to see Matt Ryan throw the ball outside. I thought his arm was dead, and it really looked dead in that tape. It really did. He can't move, and he can't throw. So anything that Ehlinger does is going to be above him. I misevaluated Matt Ryan coming into here. I watched the Buffalo game last year in Buffalo. I thought he threw the ball well. I thought he could do it. But he not only hit a wall, he collapsed once he hit that wall. I mean, there's nothing there. There's nothing there. And this move can only be beneficial for the Colts if they're willing to utilize the skill set. They can at least now bootleg. They can at least move the quarterback away from the certain spot he's going to set up on. Now, is it going to be perfect? No, by no means. But if he doesn't turn the ball over and he makes some completed pass like Daniel Jones and runs a little bit with it, you know, then they got a chance to stay. They got a chance in this game. You know, and the betting market, for some reason, they're all over it. I mean, I don't know how Indy's favored against anybody, but they are.
Oh, as high as 6 in the look ahead of this game. You flip quarterbacks for both teams. Taylor Heinicke now in, Carson Wentz out for Washington, and this line has been cut in half, down to 3. On the Indy side, and rightly so, we talk about the issues for Matt Ryan. The stats are horrible. At the same time, though, remember, Michael, when it was all run the damn ball and keep moving behind an elite offensive line? What's happened to that? They're 31st in run separation from the blocking perspective. How have they gotten so bad from being an elite unit just a year or two ago?
Ben, that's a great question, and I keep trying to figure that out, you know, and they have no toughness. One thing I liked about Frank Wright early on was I thought he was a tough guy. But if I were to say to you the Indianapolis Colts have had 2 games of 100 yards rushing, you'd say, get out of here, right? That's not who the Colts are. But for some reason, they've lost their identity. You know, the one thing you can say about Atlanta, one thing you can say about Tennessee, right? You could say this about the New York Football Giants, too. They know who they are, and no matter what happens in the game, they don't get away from it, right? They're going to stay the course. They're going to stay the course. I don't know what's happened. They can't block it. They have no physicality at all. I mean, they ran for 65 yards last week. Now, they turned it over 3 times. But, you know, they can't really – they held – I mean – Tannehill threw for 116 and won the game.
It's crazy. 116 yards. And remember, Jonathan Taylor had that stretch last year. It took until late in the season. It was in November. Rushed for 100 yards every single game, essentially, to start the season behind a very good Indianapolis offensive line. And that's where it now becomes, okay, quarterback, sure, one issue. Offensive line, another secondary large issue here. And as you mentioned, how are they laying points to anybody? Well, it's Taylor Heinicke and those suddenly hot Washington Commanders, having 1-2 straight.
Yeah, hot.
Going into Indy. Hot, very subjective word there. When we return, we'll talk about another red-hot team, the New York Jets. It's Andy Vasquez who joins the show next to give us his insights on gangrene when we return here to the Lombardi Line.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Even a wager that misses can still be a slam dunk with BetMGM, an authorized gaming partner of the NBA. Place an NBA one-game parlay wager with 4 legs or more, and if you miss one leg, you'll receive up to $25 back. Just opt into this promotion on BetMGM's app or website. With One Game Parlay, you can make selections within a single NBA game, including team and player props. So go ahead and take your favorite NBA star to score big, the home team to cover, and the over in points. Opt into the promotion, then place an NBA One Game Parlay wager of 4 legs or more, and you'll get up to $25 back if you miss one leg. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire in 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi, Nevada, or New York. Hey, Michael, the Sixers finally won a game. So good for your team.
Do you want to go down that road? We got a guest on. We could do it at the top of the hour. You want to go down that road? I'm more than happy to go down it with you. All right, we could do that.
I purposely brought it up now to limit you to like 30 seconds of anti-Sixers talk. Michael, Sixers finally got off the schneid on Monday. 1-3, though. Not the greatest start for Philadelphia. From a team that is struggling to a team that is red hot. Break up those Jets. 4 straight wins as we bring in our guest, Andy Vasquez, who covers all things New York Jets for New Jersey Advanced Media. You see him at NJ.com, the Star Ledger there as well in New Jersey. I know you're out at practice right now, Andy, so we appreciate you taking a few minutes of your time on a very busy week here. As far as the offensive personnel goes, we've heard the reports about Elijah Moore's dissatisfaction with his role in the offense as a wide receiver. We know about Breece Hall's now season-ending injury and the decision to trade for James Robinson at running back. What do you make of a lot of moving parts here in that Jet offense over the past couple weeks?
Well, yeah, the Elijah Moore stuff is especially interesting because it's just so awkward. It's so gloriously awkward for a guy to request a trade in the middle of a team's four-game winning streak and when it's a team that just has been terrible for a long time. Just to say it did not go over well, really, on any front. He just was out in the practice field, rejoined the team on Monday, was just out there warming up for his first practice. Robert Saleh had like a long conversation with him. It seemed pleasant. He just kind of gave a fist bump to Mike LaFleur, the offensive coordinator, who obviously had some issues with because he was dissatisfied with how much he was getting the ball. It's going to be interesting to see how they use him because they need him. Obviously, he's one of the explosive guys in this offense. I think him, Garrett Wilson, and Breece Hall all have, you know, home run potential. Breece Hall is the only guy this year who's really consistently shown that, and with him out for the season, they're going to need Elijah Moore. It's just going to be interesting to see how that works. And yeah, with James Robinson, I think it's just adding depth. And a guy who has like a high ceiling, he obviously rushed for 1,000 yards 2 years ago in his rookie year. He's not the home run hitter that Breece Hall is, but it gives them more depth. And, you know, their identity over this winning streak has become to run the ball and lean on their defense. And I don't think that's going to change. But it's going to be harder to do it without Breece Hall, that's for sure.
And it's going to be harder to continue this trend that they have. I mean, they have, like the other New York team, they've been remarkable in the fourth quarter, Andy. I mean, they've outscored their opponents by 54 points in the fourth, and that's been the key to their success. I mean, but my question to you is, how do they fix this horrendous third down performance offensively now that maybe Corey Davis may not play, and obviously with Breece Hall out? How are they going to fix that?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to put the ball in Zach Wilson's hands and kind of trust him a little bit more, I think, than they have been. He did it in the Steelers game at the end of that game where he was great. He was 10 of 12 in the fourth quarter, but outside of that, it has not been pretty. I think he's barely thrown for over 100 yards the last two games, and a lot of it is because they've been relying so much on the run. I think at some point they're going to have to be a run first team because that's just what they are at this point. But they're going to have to trust Zach Wilson a little bit more. And it hasn't been a case lately. You know, you talk to teams about third down conversion and it's usually like, well, we were in bad, you know, third down situations with third and long. That happened a couple times in Denver, but it's mostly been, they just haven't been executing on the plays, whether it's Zach Wilson missing a throw, whether it's a receiver not running the route properly. There's been a lot of factors. So they're going to have to figure it out. And I don't think there's the easy answer, but I think that's a very good point that you just made because it has been horrendous.
And you would think too, Andy, you flip it forward to this week, you're taking on a New England team fresh off a Monday night loss where they were embarrassed at home against the Bears. Jets trying to snap this seemingly endless losing streak against the Pats going all the way back to 2015. It's been almost 7 years. What's your biggest key, at least from covering the team, you believe that would be out there if the Jets are to finally snap that 12-game losing streak against their division rivals?
Well, there's a couple of interesting keys. First of all, as you guys pointed out, they've been so good in the fourth quarter. And it's more than anything, like Sala has pulled this like mind trick on them in the preseason. They like came back and won games in the fourth quarter, all three of them. And somehow he got the team believing like they're a good fourth quarter team. And like, you can feel like, this is my seventh year covering the Jets. I've never covered them where they were like, they believed that they were going to win games. Like, they're not surprised by this, and it hasn't been pretty, and they've gotten some breaks, sure, but like, they'd be more surprised if they went and got their butt kicked by New England. So I think that's going to, you know, help them and be a huge part of it. And then just in terms of ending that streak, I think that belief also helps. But you also know that Bill Belichick is going to have something for Zach Wilson, because he always has something for a quarterback, especially a quarterback who's struggling. So that's why in this game, I think it is going to be key for them to rely on the run, but they're going to have to be effective enough with Zach Wilson to get something done. And that's where it's going to be tricky. How much do you let him throw the ball? Because last year in his first game against the Patriots, threw four interceptions in his first 10 passes, including, I think, interceptions on the first two of the first three. And then, you know, it's going to be a really interesting balance with how they kind of attack this. But I think the fact that they're more talented than the Patriots for the first time in a long time is going to be huge for them. At some point, the streak has to end. But it is a tough situation with this Patriots team that's clearly going to be motivated after what happened against Chicago on Monday night.
Yeah, I mean, when you watch the game, though, Andy, I mean, I know that their defense is playing really well, but they still allow 41% on third down, and there was ample opportunity for Denver to really score. I thought Denver had a chance to make some plays. Are you surprised, other than Quinton Williams, they're not getting more pressure on the quarterback?
It's been interesting because, like, the last couple of games, they've been selling out to kind of stop the run. I think you saw in the fourth quarter against the Packers, when the Packers had to throw, that they were able to get a ton of pressure on the quarterback. So I think part of it is kind of their game plan, but I would agree with you. I mean, I don't think the defense is quite as good as everybody's giving them credit, because if you look at the last four games, you're talking about a Pittsburgh team that switched quarterbacks at halftime to Kenny Pickett, a Miami team that lost its backup quarterback on the first play of the game, was playing with two backup tackles and backup cornerbacks, and mm-hmm. had their third string quarterback for the whole game. In Green Bay, they're coming back from London. Aaron Rodgers has a thumb issue. And then last week, you're playing a Broncos team with its backup quarterback. So have they done a good job of taking advantage of the situation in front of them? Yes. But I think especially in the middle of the field, especially their linebackers and coverage, I think that's why you're seeing that high third down number, because they're not up to par with the rest of the defense. And I think that's a vulnerability that you'll see New England exploit this week.
At least from the individual perspective, Sauce Gardner now as a cornerback, he's your favorite to win Defensive Rookie of the Year. Is what he's doing, do you believe, sustainable with how impressive he's looked the first 7 weeks?
Yeah, man, he's good. Like, we all thought he was going to be pretty good when you saw him in training camp, to see how physical and long and fast he is and smart. And then you see what he's doing. I mean, there was a play against the Dolphins where he messed up and got beat by Tyreek Hill at the line of scrimmage, and he caught up to him, and he got called for pass interference, but like, he caught up to him. Like, that, you don't see a player make a mistake and get beat at the line of scrimmage and then catch up to Tyreek Hill. And that's what Sauce at 6 foot, almost 6 foot three, did. And it kind of just, teams are trying him. Sala said today that they're not going to be trying him forever, because he's going to start picking off balls. And he almost had one in the end zone, got held by a receiver in Denver. I mean, he's really good. It helps that DJ Reed has been really good too. And I think, you know, they have two corners playing at a very high level right now. And they have been able to make that their defensive identity. But again, I do think in the middle of the field, and that's why you've seen some tight ends have some success against them, they're vulnerable.
Hey, real quick, Andy, Corey Davis, will he play this week or not?
It's up in the air. Basically, he's day-to-day. I don't think he's practicing today. They're going to see how he feels going up to game time. My guess would be not, but it's still Wednesday. Let's see if he gets into practice. Mm-hmm. If he can get into practice on a limited basis by Friday, I think we'll have a chance of playing.
All right, pay attention to those practice reports there. Patriots about a point and a half favorites against the Jets Sunday. For Andy Vasquez, you can follow at Andy_Vasquez. what, seventh year covering the team? You've never seen the Jets beat the Patriots since you've been on the beat. So we hopefully finally something will turn. Now, this is one of the best chances they have had after being outscored 79-19 in the two games last season. Andy, can't thank you enough for taking the time.
Thanks,
while you're
Andy.
Out there at practice.
Best of
great
luck.
Stuff, and appreciate the time.
Tony Soprano's hometown newspaper right there, baby.
Hey, we know Michael loves that. A little Star Ledger shout-out. Star Ledger and NJ.com. You can find his great work there for Andy Vasquez. Hour number two of the Lombardi Line comes up next. It's time, Michael, to have the Green Bay Packers discussion. We will do
it. Oh, we got it. I'll help you in therapy.